Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome back to the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey. I'm here in the most lockdown region on the entire planet, Ontario, Canada. Len, my co-host, is on the other end of the line here. Looking well as always. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
I'm still reeling from the markets today, Joey. It's been a wild ride. Other than that, I'm okay. How about you?
I'm good. I don't know what kind of reeling we're talking about, but we'll get into it. The price of Bitcoin, $56,143 US.
Wow, in Canadian, it's $68,086.11. Very cool.
Stuff. Yeah. What's in the news, buddy?
All right. We're going to be going right off the bat talking about jobs in Canada for the month of April. So there was a massive employment drop. So apparently there was a report, Canada's labor market lost 207,000 jobs in just a month of April 2021 alone. And this is due to closures due to COVID. So the unemployment rate went from 7.5% to 8.1%. And the real number should actually be 10.5%, but the numbers are being cooked. So the real number of 10.5% should include all the people that are looking, that want to work but have quit looking for work. So essentially these people are disenfranchised and they're no longer looking for work. So there's a fair number of people that want to work that just can't do it. And right now leading the charge is Ontario and BC. They're leading the league in job losses. And the month of May is likely going to follow April as due to closures in Ontario that will likely take us to June 2nd. So it looks like things are not going to be improving anytime soon. And even the U.S., they're not immune to this. Goldman has been quoted saying that they're mentioning that it's a weaker than expected April job report. So the U.S. is even reporting some weaker April numbers. So just my take on this, Joey, is that, you know, with more money being expected to be printed and there's a rumor of $3 trillion stimulus in the USA that's going to be coming out shortly, and Canada's CERB program is going to take us to September 2021, there appears to be no end in sight to this decline. The high percentage of people on CERB, and this is staggering, I had no idea, is about 1 in 5 workers were given CERB money through the duration of this whole ordeal. 1 in 5, that's incredible. So the expectations of UBI being rolled out, this seems to be more of a reality every day. Inflation's probably going to be running away, and there's no way to stop it. All the bullets that they have in their chamber, i.e. raising interest rates, this is not on the agenda. It's basically, they're not going to do it, so we're going to have some runaway inflation numbers in a not-too-distant future. Ultimately, you're going to have smart money that's going to be flowing in into places where you can store your wealth, somewhere like Bitcoin. So it's not looking good with these job numbers. It's going to be pretty bad going forward. I don't know. What's your thoughts, Joey?
I think this is a great example of what you can expect when you live in what some people in the Bitcoin space would call like a cantillon society, where the money is changing hands multiple times before it gets to the people who need it the most. And by the time the people who get the money that need it the most have to buy assets, they're paying a raised price because they're never the first ones at the spigot. And this is another example of that. So you look at the jobs numbers. That was for April, you said. I can just imagine what it's going to look like in May, because we're already halfway through May, or a third of the way through May, and there's no plans to end the lockdown. The government has, I'm going to choose my words carefully here. The provincial government has done a poor job with vaccination and safety messaging following vaccination. So I don't expect people, even if they're vaccinated, to emerge from their cave of hysterical fear and begin returning to these jobs that are, you know, by and large, public-facing service industry jobs, the ones that really we need to stimulate. For example, I think of to stimulate the economy, I think of it in Dundas, which is not far from where I am. You know, there's a buzzing downtown sort of restaurant and a small shop hub. And without the restaurants there, no one comes down, because you can't spend a day going to small shops. You stop and get something to eat. You stop and get something to drink. You visit the brewery. You visit the Asian restaurant that's popular in the area, the Deluxe Bangkok Spoon. These things draw people to city centers. And you can't just say, well, we're going to lift the mask mandate and the lockdown and everything's going to go back to normal. It's not. Part of the reason for this is the poor medical messaging. Now, that aside, CERB, you know, 1 in 5 workers got it. And you're starting to see now in the United States, I saw Biden today. I don't want to switch entirely to the US, but I saw Biden today address a problem that we're going to start having here before long, that if you get offered a job, you have to take it or your benefits will cease. I don't know what we're going to do here. I thought in the past we used to say that you had to prove you were looking for work in order to continue receiving unemployment benefits. I would qualify CERB as an unemployment benefit, though I may be the only one in the province that feels that way, it seems. You know, this, like you said, when it comes to printing and its relationship to rates, and like I just mentioned, its relationship to the Cantillon effect and hard assets, this is only going one way. And so you have to choose your path, Western man. Do you want a world where your fiat currency is eroding in your pocket, the bank who tells you that everything else is unsafe dings you at negative 0.5% every month or every year in order to force you to spend on trinkets and booze and lottery tickets? Or do you want something that's longer time horizon, that's more reasonable as far as what your expectations of return are, that's apart from this system that, you know, I hate to break it to you, but talk about like crumbling foundation. You're really starting to see it in places that maybe even I thought were a few years away. Certainly last year at this time when COVID was uncertain, I didn't think it would be this quickly that even while we recover from the pandemic and the pandemic really, it seems, only remains in charts presented by various science tables and the news media. Most people I know are back to normal, but still, these are the things that are being passed, the spending that's being passed, there's no end in sight for this. So you have to make a decision. I would argue you have to make it sooner rather than later. If you're going to start thinking about this or other durable goods, homes, et cetera, or financial assets, I think, you know, some people would say this is the third inning. I would say it's the seventh now. We're getting pretty close to what might be the watershed moment for a lot of these sort of staple ways to spend and save money. And Bitcoin, like you said, is really looking better and better day after day, even among the chaos today in the market, still looking better day after day.
Well, looking forward to the next topic. And it's kind of parallels to the previous topic, is going to be the big reset, not the great reset, but the big reset in Newfoundland. And we'll be talking about their debt. So things aren't looking all that rosy over there in Newfoundland. So Moya Green, she's the chair of the premier's economic recovery team, proposed tax increases and cuts to programs. So essentially what's going on there, they're getting runaway debt. So she's prepared a report, a six-year plan to help to have the province recover. The province right now is $5 billion in debt. It doesn't seem like a lot, but if you put it into perspective, only 500,000 people live in the province of Newfoundland. So that equates to about $100,000 per resident. And that was... that's as of this month. Ontario's number two at 58K per resident. This is the debt to per person living here. But these are numbers, the Ontario number is from February. So this number is going to change based on the last budget. The lowest province that has the best in terms of like debt to per capita ratio is BC, $43,000 per person, which is still rather high. So in order to rein in the soaring public debt and to end a long-term pattern of deficit spending, Green's recommending a 5% reduction in core government spending and the operating grants for Memorial University and the College of North Atlantic to be slashed by 30% at a rate of 5% annually. That's going to lead to a brain drain in Newfoundland. It's going to be horrendous. She's also recommending a 1% increase in taxes on the HST. Right now it's currently at 15%, and she's recommending it to be increased to 16%. She's also talking about recommending increase to other fees, like when you have to get the new license plates or new license plates renewed and or your license is renewed, et cetera, et cetera. So all these provincial fees are going to be going up to help make ends meet. So what's going on in Newfoundland is not going to be done, like it's not in a vacuum. It's going to spread to other provinces. So don't think that we are immune for us, you and I, Joey, in Ontario, but anywhere else in Alberta, BC, wherever. What's happening there could happen to other provinces in a not too distant future as they try to manage the post-pandemic budgets, because they've been spending through the nose to try to keep their heads above water. And in the end, it's just setting everybody further and further behind. Essentially, we are all screwed, Joey.
Can we talk briefly about, you know, the absolute, like, the meme of this report? Like, you couldn't pick a different fucking name besides the Big Reset amongst all the online chatter about the Great Reset and about how COVID is leading to the Great Reset and the financial system is collapsing leading to the Great. Like, you couldn't have picked a better name. This tells me, you know, there's some arguments to be made, I guess, that, well, it doesn't matter what the meme is. It's not a real thing. But really, this tells me that the people who wrote this report are either detached or don't care, because the millennials know this this sort of meme, the reset meme, and I count myself among them, though I'm not a resident of Newfoundland, obviously, and thankfully, after reading this report, that's a bad start for me. That leaves a bad taste in my mouth, but I got lots to say about this, so let's get into it. Green mentions in the intro to the report that the aging demographic is a problem. She doesn't say it explicitly, but she implicitly mentions that basically the aging out of the population is causing an issue for them. And this is to say that the millennial generation, people my age and a little younger, are going to be asked to contribute a greater sum than they ever signed up for. So, you know, this is something that I think is just an unbelievable ask for a government that has, you know, to me, to make it to a point where you have to release this report publicly, really screwed the pooch for the better part of 3 decades or 4 decades, depending on how you measure some of the numbers they're putting in. So let's talk a bit about something you mentioned earlier with CERB and whatnot. And we've mentioned on this show too, how governments measure GDP and how government transfers are included in that number. So Len, if I told you that government transfers were X percentage of household income on average in Newfoundland and Labrador, what would you say X was in the most recent measurement in 2020?
10%.
50%. Or close to it. God. It's about 40 or 50% here. I'm having a hard time because the bar graph is, I would say, probably intentionally hard to read. They don't put the percentages there, even though that's really the only number that matters. So incredible number here. It was as low as about 20 or 30% in 81. And it's only gone up since then to 2020. I mean, who knows what it is now, but it's nuts. Okay. It's insane. I have some other notes here. Labor compensation is expected to decrease by 4.8%, and household income will continue to be bolstered by federal emergency response benefits, including CERB. So it's not even provincial transfers. They're relying on the federal government to keep CERB going. And the growth in other government transfer payments to individuals, such as Old Age Security and Canada Pension Plan. The programs, by the way, which later in their report say are unsustainable at the provincial level, they're expecting the country to sustain enough to keep their economy, it seems like, to keep the heart beating slowly enough to say they're alive. Conservatively, natural resources make up about 30% of the economic output between mining and refining and other industries related to extraction of natural resources, which includes fishery. And you're going to go away from that, it looks like, if you're in Newfoundland, even in this environment, because of the green portion of this document, which is insane. You telling me really, Len, that in the same week that those numbers come out where China produces more greenhouse gases than the rest of the world, these guys are deciding that in order to save the economy, they need to basically wean themselves off of 30% of their GDP, knowing that 50% of it comes from government transfers? So what does that leave them with? It's 20%? Where's the 20%? It's closed from COVID. Like what is left after that? I'm having a very hard time understanding that. And they don't really mention it in the report. The report's full of Chomsky sentences. If you don't know what that is, look it up. You're not going to be impressed. I want to touch on one thing here. Wage gap between genders. It's radioactive. But I'll leave you with this here. There's only one comment in here that I want you to think about. It's the wrong approach. The comment from Green is, wage gaps must be eliminated. Everyone must be able to advance through their careers at the same pace and receive equal compensation. That's not how you handle a wage gap between genders, if there is one at all. Let's talk a bit about net migration, which, by the way, they keep on calling out migration. I think it's called emigration when you leave a place. You don't have to say out migration. That's not, you know, I don't know who this is geared toward, someone with a grade 6 reading level, but I digress. Net migration has historically been negative. That is, the number of people leaving has been greater than the number moving to this province. Net out migration increased rapidly after 1994 following the collapse of the cod fishery, reaching a peak of roughly 12,000 in 1998. Key part here. Most out migration was and has been by people under 35, although the net out migration occurred across all groups. Len, what do you think that means for people who are left under 35 at working age? There's too many pensioners there, not enough working people. And so what does it mean? What do you think?
I would imagine that the people left behind are just not the cream of the crop. They're just, you know, they're probably not going to be able to provide very much to the province, but also there might be a few of them that are just, they're, you know, civic pride tying them down, or maybe families tying them down to stay there. But the ones that are transient, they could just pick up and move to a different province.
There's not enough to keep the best and brightest there if the ask is going to be so ridiculous because of the poor performance of the provincial government over the last 30 years. And like you said, the ones who stay, I was going to be more gentle than that, but they're not the cream of the crop, plain and simple. Out of the last 39 years, Len, we'll say out of the last 40 years, how many years did the province have negative outflows of citizens?
Every year.
Not every year. It's been 31 of 40 years, if you include this year. Presumably, they will have negative flow this year as well. Okay. So, incredible. So 75% of the time they leave. One of my favorite pet projects to nuke on social media every time I get the chance are teachers. They are poor performers without accountability thanks to their union. Well, guess what? The chickens are coming home to roost here. The teacher's pension plan, which has a ratio of plan assets to plan liabilities of 0.51, has an unfunded liability in March 31st, 2020 of $1.6 billion. I wonder what it is now. What do you think, Len? After the market, buddy, it's probably brutal. Then I see here people who have been supporting stuff like infrastructure. We'll just build infrastructure. It's a way to spend money and stimulate the economy. Bad news. Newfoundland has more kilometers of highway per 1,000 residents than any other province in the country. So that's not the right direction to go. What percentage of the total revenues do you think are going to service the debt, Len? What's a reasonable expectation there, would you say?
30%.
11% is what they're giving.
Okay, that's really...
So you shot high there. I would say 11% is even unreasonable.
$5 billion debt, considering the revenues, I was expecting it to be much higher.
Got to figure... So if the revenues include government transfers, then about 5% of that is going to debt service. So incredible when you think more and more about the spiral these guys are in. The solutions presented in the report, these are my words, not Moya Green's. The solutions presented to the citizens they're poor. It's to expand the public service through panels, consultants, transparency efforts, oversight committees. And that's flying in the face of some of the things she's saying to cut. You cannot suggest a cut to the public service by 5% outright. And then also say that you have to expand capabilities as far as, you know, records and transparency. Those two things do not jive. They fly in the face of each other. They drive past each other on the thousands of kilometers of highway per citizen or whatever they got over there. So, and of course, something that we've seen in Ontario, how else are they going to raise money, Len? We're going to sell some government holdings. Offer transmission and distribution assets to the private sector to either own or operate. Offer the sale of island generation assets to the private sector. Sell the provincial government's oil and gas equity interests when oil prices increase. And finally, sell the Bull Arm fabrication site currently owned by the Oil and Gas Corporation. This is a disaster. It is a disaster on all fronts. It is a poor report. It is a poor outlook. It's offering poor solutions. And so to tie this back into Bitcoin, this... I have a thing I like to say sometimes to friends of mine when we're talking about sort of the absurdities you see on TV and here in the news now from all sorts of people, political or otherwise. If someone gets on TV and says something incredibly stupid that you know is wrong and you can't believe they said it, think about the filter mechanism in their mind. Think about the things that the filter mechanism held back, the things they didn't find fit for public consumption. how bad are the things that are still floating around in their gray matter, if that's the dumb shit that made it out into the meat space? This report is the dumb shit that made it out into the meat space. You can imagine what the true outlook is if this is the stuff they're offering up as the set of problems and the appropriate, quote unquote, appropriate response. This plan is like a 30-year plan. I don't know if you saw that. Like, some of the cuts are, you know, extended over decades and, you know, will balance out. I think the one point in the report says that they're going to balance out some of these things in 6 years or 8 years. Len, there's no way anyone worth a penny is sticking around out there. There's no way. What do you think? Am I way off base there? I blacked out for the last 10 minutes. Tell me, how much did I get right? How much did I get wrong?
No, you're bang on. And I agree. There's going to be people that, you know, who have any sort of influence over there, any sort of money, they're going to just pick up and leave. What's the point of sticking around when they're just going to be nickel and dimed to the nth degree and they're going to have nothing in the end? They're just going to be trying to service a debt that's just ballooning and it continues to balloon. But one thing to look at is in the province of Saskatchewan, I think it was Saskatchewan in the 90s. They were built out. And so some of the things that they've done over there, they try to consolidate services rather than having some services far out in, you know, in the hinterland. They try to put them more into like urbanized areas. And so those small towns, they just kind of went by the wayside and they just disappeared. That's probably what's going to happen here in Newfoundland. Like, the province, the population isn't very large as it is, but they'll just probably try to consolidate services just to try to put them in major urban centers. And unfortunately, small towns are going to bite the dust. They're going to feel the effect of this. It's sad, but it's just the reality of it. You can't continue servicing this debt the way it is and just try and think things are going to work out. It won't. Eventually, you just have to pay the piper. And here we are.
This is the equivalent of paying the minimum payment on your credit card bill. You know, when the payment total, like the sum owed, is like $9,000 and your minimum payment is $27. And if you look at the fine print, it says, you know, if you pay the minimum payment every month, we estimate it'll take you like 225 years to pay off the whole debt, but you'll pay it off and we won't bother you every month. That's what this looks like to me. And so again, to tie it back to Bitcoin, like Len said, this is not going to happen in a bubble. It's not going to happen in a vacuum. This is going to happen in every province, maybe short of Alberta, because they seem to be resisting this, you know, drop everything, sacrifice women and children all the way to get, you know, windmills and green energy. I'm not saying there's not a place for renewables, but it's not 100% and it's not 100% over 5 years. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's a happy medium here that doesn't include, you know, destroying livelihoods, destroying businesses, crushing the middle class with additional fees and taxes. If you care about this stuff and you want to opt out and you don't want to play the political game, Bitcoin is a tool you can use. Spend some money there. Start doing research on these things. You'll find that, you know, Newfoundland is not alone. They may be the most recent and maybe, judging by the title of the report, like I mentioned, the most tone deaf, but there's many such cases in the modern Western world where debts and debt repayment and the threat of rising rates, though we don't view that as a threat on this show, but even without the rising rates, unfortunately, it seems like a lot of these places are going to be buried in their own malfeasance in the form of, you know, 9-10 figure financial disasters. So anyway, yeah, I wanted to hit that story because it's like the report itself is like, it's like infuriating to read. It's just, it's completely short-sighted. And I didn't look up anything about Moya Green. Like I wrote in the Twitter thread that sparked me to this. I can't tell her from Eve, but I don't need to know what she's thinking. And certainly I don't need to know that the report has a very clear and present political slant as well. So,
well, they have some tough decisions they're going to have to make going forward in Newfoundland. I don't envy their position. So moving forward, let's talk about Doge and Elon and Saturday Night Live. What a disaster this is turning out to be, but it's dominated my Twitter feed. So I decided let's talk about it one more time. Can't believe we're talking about Doge again. So some analysis on May 8th, Doge had more trading volume on that day than the entire crypto market had on an average day in the last bull market. So that's incredible that so much liquidity was there with Doge. It's just insane. A lot of people jumping on board. And for those who think that Doge is the people's coin, think about this for a second. Only 12 addresses hold more than 66% of all coins. This is actually one of the most centralized coins that is in existence right now that has a decent market cap. And if you want to talk about concentration, okay, a single dojo owner possesses 28% of the total supply. 11 of the largest dojo owners contain about 46% of the supply. So there's a lot of centralization amongst just a very few amount of people. It's incredible. So the price of Doge went up to 74 cents slightly before Saturday Night Live went on the air. And it dropped hard from my analysis around 11:55 p.m. Eastern time. And it dropped to 45%. So that's almost a 30 cent drop in a very short period of time. And this whole saga, I'm getting tired of Doge. I have Doge fatigue. You know, it's really not doing anything positive to the Bitcoin community. The meme coin has so much volatility and it's very speculative. And this volatility doesn't help Bitcoin because the narrative rubs off on Bitcoin because it's almost now it's guilty by association. So they see Bitcoin and they kind of associate it with Doge. It's not what it should be. In reality, Bitcoin is far more stable than Doge is. Bitcoin is very much different. Doge has an unlimited supply. Bitcoin doesn't. Bitcoin is very much limited. So, and Bitcoiners themselves, we're not focused on selling Bitcoin. We're not looking for quick buck. We're trying to just basically hold on to it long term. Just like what you say, we're kind of opting out of the current system when we're buying Bitcoin, and we're kind of going to hold on to it. Institutions are flocking to Bitcoin, not to Doge. If a shitcoin can enhance an existing product or solve a new problem, all the more power to it. But if it's nothing more than a pump and dump, step aside or get run over by the BTC freight train. This is getting to me. I'm pissed off with Doge. I hope this thing gets driven down to zero. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but I'm tired of it. And I don't know what you got to talk about, Joey, but I'm pissed off with Doge.
You're like Keith Olbermann on his show before he turned into like this borderline like insane bipolar person who screams at, you know, conservatives all day on Twitter. He used to do special comment. And at the end of his show, he'd like rip on some charlatan or some like insane debauchery that he saw on TV. That's what you just did there. So kudos to you. I'm with you. Len and I share a document that we go back and forth on. He puts it in the stories and I usually write some notes and do a little research and add some color to the stories. And, you know, you can imagine how much I wrote for the Newfoundland Great Reset or Big Reset story. On this, I only wrote two things. One is Mark Cuban's a dope for getting on TV and Twitter and saying this thing has a greater value than zero. And Doge seems to have a future and a present as a coin that's been co-opted by charlatans and scammers. So fuck these guys, man. I'm glad this is over. Like, I don't want to see Elon in the Wario suit anymore. That's it. This is done now. Let's let this thing die and let's get back to business.
All right, let's go to the Bitcoin scarcity. So this is something that I just learned about, that when you lock up BTC in DeFi or decentralized finance, this is kind of like a black hole, that the Bitcoin is kind of locked away. And some analysis, so more than 210,000 Bitcoin, about 1% of the 21 million BTC supply cap, are now locked in various forms on the blockchain, like Ethereum, whatever. So this equates to about $11.5 billion in current USD prices. This is locked away. So we have a 1% of the supply that's locked away, just trying to collect interest, and we're not going to see that liquidity in the market. This number is up 300% since September 2020. That's insane. There's a massive increase in this. So this black hole should get more attention. The more BTC that's locked up in DeFi environment, the more scarce BTC becomes. Right now we have 1% that's locked up, and that's, you know, kind of a significant number, maybe not substantial, but it's decent enough to look at. But a 3-time increase in September 2020, that's something to consider moving forward. And the likelihood that this number will increase going forward as BTC continually rises in prices, we could see more and more of this money locked away in DeFi. That's going to create a feedback loop. And you might see just the price continually rise, more Bitcoin locked up, more scarcity, price continues to rise. It's going to be insane to see what's going to happen going forward as BTC price continues to rise. And I think this just could be a runaway freight train. I don't know what you think, Joy.
Well, okay. I want to say a few things here because I think when people say BTC locked up in DeFi, what they hear two things. They hear what you just said, which is that's one thing, right? So I think, are you referring to the number of tokens that are on services like Ledin and BlockFi, or are you referring to wrapped Bitcoin on Ethereum?
This I don't know. I didn't go that deep into it. All I just know is 210,000 BTC are locked up in various blockchains like Ethereum.
Okay, so I'm going to say a few things here. The total number of Bitcoin locked in on Ethereum is zero. It's always going to be fucking zero. That's just the way it is. There's no Bitcoin on Ethereum. There's a number of tools that are related to the position of a Bitcoin on Ethereum. There's no Bitcoin on Ethereum. There will never be. Don't ever send Bitcoin to an Ethereum address. Anytime someone from Ethereum says something is locked there, they're lying. That's part one. Part two is more than 10 million Ethereum are locked in other DeFi tokens and farming yield campaigns. I don't know how long that's going to last. I would suggest to people that the surest way to find out what the SEC is capable of and what banks are capable of is to take their interest from right underneath their nose via these sorts of, I want to call them scams. I won't because I'm upsetting people on Reddit, but these sorts of campaigns have a cost to banks and the cost is getting bigger and bigger. I doubt very much this will continue unscathed. It's still funny to me that every F-head, you know, that's constantly talking about Bitcoin is too slow, it's too old, it's not going to last, the mining fees are going to cost it because it's going to, you know, the mining reward is going to go to zero, blah, blah, blah. How is it possible that all these guys are doing is ripping off Bitcoin's native features all the time? They're mimicking the scarcity with burns, and now they want to change the deflationary policy. They're talking about, their own scarcity mechanism is DeFi lockups. Proof of stake is really, you know, the Cantillon's cryptocurrency mechanism of choice. It's the same as what we have now. The guys who are closest to the spigot get to make the rules. And even with all these innovations, okay, that Ethereum is claiming to be championing, still the fucking claim to fame is how much Bitcoin you got on the network or think you have on the network. It's a joke, man. It's a joke. This is never going to stop with these guys. There is no Ethereum that has Bitcoin locked. None. It's a mechanism for spending or whatever the circumstance is regarding the Bitcoin on the network. It's never going to be this way. And I got bad news for the eth heads here. The SEC chair Gensler, who used to work at MIT, said back in 2018, so not long ago, friends, there's a strong case that both Ethereum and Ripple are non-compliant securities. Well, guess what? The SEC is already on Ripple, and he's the head of the SEC now. So I would suggest to you that Ethereum may take longer to unwind, but as a wise man once said, the regulatory gears turn slowly, but they grind to a very fine dust. So if they come for Ethereum and DeFi and all these things, they're not going to miss. Okay. Worth mentioning here, I made a note to myself since I keep seeing it on Twitter. The BTC dominance on January 1st, 2018, before the monster crash that lasted a year and a half or a year, was 36%. Right now it's 45%. So I almost am asking for the Bitcoin dominance to drop even further. And let's bleed these things out, man. Let's bleed them out. Enough is enough of this nonsense. It's the same scams all the time with these guys. Before it was ICOs. Now it's NFTs and DeFi. It's not going to last. If you think that, you know, the $1 trillion American and global banking industry is going to sit back and watch anons take interest on sushi swap from people for the foreseeable future, I got a bridge to sell you, man. You're in La La Land. It's not going to last. It's not going to last. You don't want to be the guy holding the token when the announcement comes out on Twitter from, you know, Squawk Box or whatever account puts it out. Zero Hedge puts out a tweet about sushi swapping under the SEC's watchful eye, because it's going to happen. It's not a matter of when, or sorry, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And you're asking for trouble going down this road. It's one thing, and this is something I think makes a difference for Bitcoin. It's slow. Yeah, for sure. It's not so shiny. That's true too. Flies under the radar. But if you really want to draw the ire of the powers that be, this is the way to do it. Keep doing this and see what happens, because it's not going to be long before these guys who want money, were making money on this kind of stuff, their products not long ago, are going to start coming for DeFi. I really think it's not going to be as long in the tooth as the Ethereum heads think.
Well, next month we'll be celebrating DAO Hack Days. I think it's June 15th is when in 2016 we had the big hack to an Ethereum network that almost brought it down to its knees. But anyways, moving on. Next story is the miners that are outside of China. So for the first time for the first month in the F2 pool's 8-year operation, they now have more Bitcoin hash rate coming from outside China than from in it. So if anybody's wondering what F2 pool is, it's a mining pool that's actually number 2 in hash rate. So it's a very, very large one. And it's one of the largest and oldest ones. They have about 16% of the total hash rate. So we've talked about legislation, U.S. legislation on a state and municipal level a few times to incentivize miners to come and show up to set up shop in the USA. So we talked about BitF actually just last week expanding to 8 exahash per second. And they're also going to be expanding their operation to Argentina. So the more hash power that comes from outside China, the better it is for the Bitcoin community. The notion of it being decentralized, it's more so like it's better if we have more people, more companies that are doing it outside of China, than it basically is decentralized rather than having a lot of the hash rate come from one country. And that's contrary to what Bitcoin stands for. We want to have decentralized. We want to have a global community. We want to have everybody involved, not everything kind of shoehorned into one country like China to do all the hash rate. So this is actually a really good thing. It's a sign of the times. It's great for Bitcoin. And I'm curious to see what's going to happen going forward. Who's going to pick up the tabs here when China, they're trying to push out a lot of the miners due to the energy usage. It looks like United States is picking up the tab here. Canada, some parts of Europe, you mentioned Estonia a few times. So it's looking really good going forward to having some different companies, different miners mine Bitcoin. The hash rate power coming outside of China is fantastic. What are your thoughts, Joey?
There's two things here, right? One that we've seen, both on the side of FUD. Finally, a story I'm not going to be upset about. On the side of FUD, you've seen two consistent FUDs the last, 8 months, 7 months, whatever the however long this sort of bull run's been. One is Chinese centralization in mining, and the other is energy. So China this week is reportedly anyways being, emitting more greenhouse gases than the rest of the world combined. So we can forget about that as a FUD avenue from here on out. And now I find that they're decentralizing mining because it seems like there's more F2 and other mining inputs coming from outside of China. Fantastic. Like you mentioned, this is what we're looking for. Bitcoin is the energy buyer of last resort, as Michael Saylor says. So yeah, that's a good sign for companies who are looking to get on the Bitcoin mining train and don't want to do it in China. It seems like there's other options popping up as is want to do in Bitcoin mining. It seems like the energy gets cheaper and cheaper, and the Bitcoin miners get more and more decentralized as time goes on. Remind me, back in 2017, there was one major mining pool that was the center of a lot of this FUD. I can't remember the name of it, but I think it was also in China, right? Was it Ant Pool?
They're number one in terms of hash rate. I don't know if they're the one you're talking about, but they are the number one miner as of today.
I don't remember. But anyway, this is a good story. I'm looking forward to covering more of these stories as they come up because I think they're going to. So I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah, it's going to help create more security to the network as we decentralize where the hash rate's coming from. This is fantastic. So moving on, we are going to the Canadian stories. So on May 7th, just Friday last week, Bitfarms, BITF is their ticker. They announced their application to be listed on NASDAQ. It was approved. And as a result, BitF shot up by 22% that day. This is wonderful news for Bitfarm. So again, this is not financial advice, but Hut also has an application pending to be listed on NASDAQ. What we just saw, what happened with Bitfarm, will happen with Hut. Once they get approved, or if they get approved, they get a NASDAQ. So something to consider if you want to put your money on somewhere. Hut may be a hot play going forward. Thoughts, Joy?
I like it. I like miners. I think they're pretty reliable in terms of tracking the price of Bitcoin and in terms of their business model not allowing them to be stagnant. Like I just mentioned, they're constantly having to seek out cheaper energy, cheaper technology. They're trying to scale. They're trying to do all these things, joining pools, like we mentioned, I think with Hut 2 weeks ago or last week. So Bitfarms and Hut and some of these other Canadian miners, they're good investments. And the NASDAQ thing, like I don't know how many times you need to see the NASDAQ listing pump a stock before you realize that stocks pump when they get listed on the NASDAQ. That's a no-brainer. So death taxes and the NASDAQ listing, three sure things in life, definitely to keep an eye on if you're investing in these Canadian equities. Also, like, good, it's good to support the Canadian equities. There's obviously, like, you know, Riot in the United States and some other ones in America. But if you want bang for your buck, I think with higher sort of higher ceiling potential because of the NASDAQ listing opportunities, I think it's in Canadian miners. That's not financial advice. Nothing here is financial advice, but that's where I'd be parking money if I was looking at miners for sure. If I wasn't, if my entire net worth wasn't in Coinbase going into earnings this week, I'd probably be at least a little bit in miners.
You had a good day with Coinbase. They went up, what, 10% today? So you're smiling.
It's about time.
Yeah, they had pretty bad times this year. ICO. IPO. So anyways, BitBuy, so it's an exchange, a Canadian exchange, and they have partnered up with Knox Custody, an institutional Bitcoin custody provider, and they will be allowing them to store their users' Bitcoin holdings in an offline vault with insurance up to the full value of the holdings. So people that are using BitBuy, they're using Knox Custody to store Bitcoin. So it's pretty good indication that they're in it, you know, in it for the long haul, and they want to stick around.
It's a great name, Knox Custody.
Yeah,
very cool. Did they come up with that, you think? I wonder, huh? It's almost it's almost like all the good gold stuff is just slowly creeping into Bitcoin for its final resting place.
Yeah. So next we have the Toronto FC MLS soccer player. I can't pronounce his first name, but his last name is Achara. So Mr. Achara is now taking half of his salary in Bitcoin. So we have a lot more people in the pro sport fields taking some or all of their salary in Bitcoin. And here's another one. Kudos to him, and I hope it all goes well for him.
I'm trying to think about how this guy's name is said. Ifananyachi Achara. I'm probably saying that wrong, but I did see this story. Like you said, this is worth mentioning here. Okay. We've talked about the big four sports leagues because of the cap and the sort of like cash capital a lot of these franchises probably have. The FC is not a big four sports league. You know, it may not even be a big five. Like, shit, the, you know, farm teams, in the NHL and, the QMJ and the OHL, like, they might get more fans to their games than the FC do.
The FCs get way more than does like the Marlies or whatever. Way more.
If you had to bet on who would get more games, the OHL final game 7 or the FC season opener, where would you put your money? Gun to your head.
FC.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They have a rabid following, and they fill up their stadium pretty well. So it's, yeah.
Do you think that's only because they sell scarves? I think the OHL is missing a huge chunk of the market not selling scarves. Everybody wants a team scarf now.
I could be wrong, but the OHL, their arenas are really small in comparison to what you could do with BMO. You could fit a lot more people in BMO than that's what I'm betting on, but what the heck? Why not?
I like BMO. I like the story. And you've convinced me now. I will buy a scarf for the FC, and I will attend a game if they don't make me wear a mask once I get my shot. So
you'll be one of the red patch boys. That's good. So talking about energy usage and greenhouse gas, well, Silver Energy bought a cryptocurrency mining rig, and it is going to be powered by the Flare natural gas at a site outside Brooks, Alberta, Canada. So interesting. So Silver Energy is a company from the United States. They purchased a mining rig for $350,000, and they're transporting that guy up to Brooks, Alberta to mine Bitcoin and using the Flare natural gas to power it. Incredible stuff. People should be talking about this. This is using basically, you know, waste energy, waste gas that really is going to be detrimental to the environment. And they're burning it and powering miners. Fantastic stuff.
I'm in a Telegram group with Steve Barber, who's like Mr. Flare Gas Mining in Canada. I should ask him about this Brooks operation. I'm curious as to whether or not he's helping some of these companies get that done. It seems like it's not that intuitive. Like, I don't know much about flare gas, but for them to be able to put like physical infrastructure down on a flare and mine Bitcoin, it still blows me away. Like, I really do want to find out more about that. Maybe we can get him on the show to talk a bit about that, because that's something that's like, man, talk about an innovation. That's awesome. And by the sounds of it, a Canadian product, which is even better.
Yeah. Oh, no, the product is not Canadian. The product is United States, but they're using
the innovation, like the mining with flare.
Gotcha. So Canada's 14 Fortune 500 companies, they've earned $50 billion Canadian in profits last year. You know what, Joey? None of them own any Bitcoin yet. They got to get on board, man. So anyway, so basically the next story is going to be about Einstein Exchange. You ever heard of them before?
We're already leaving the Fortune 500?
I'm not sure. Do you want to talk about it?
I don't know who the 14 are. I would guess it's like, the thing is, the problem I have is that I think some Spotify of these would are probably, be one? No, Shopify. Shopify, Teladoc, is CrowdStrike one? That's Canadian too, I think, right? I don't know. I have to look this up. But the problem I have really is that I think most of the Canadian companies that are in the Fortune 5 are tech companies. And that really, I shouldn't say it surprises me, but it is a bit disappointing. It seems like that's, you know, maybe we're not quite there yet with some of these, you know, only two digit billion cash reserves. It's like maybe they don't want to put it in quite yet at, you know, 10 billion or 12 billion. But I hadn't heard that. So I'm surprised to hear that. Hopefully that turns around.
Yeah, I agree. You ever hear of Einstein Exchange, Joey?
Yeah, I have. I've never used it. So I don't believe we're going to have a video coming out on that anytime soon.
No, nor will we, because it's a failed exchange. In fact, it's gone under. But anyways, there was a landmark ruling in BC by the BC Supreme Court. And some people were suing Einstein Exchange, one person in particular. So the courts basically came to a judgment. They have to pay this. The exchange has to pay this individual $535,000. So the story is somebody bought 50 Bitcoin back in 2019, and the price at that time was about $10,000 each. But unfortunately, Einstein shut their doors shortly thereafter. But there was a record of email exchanges, texts, etc., saying that, you know, they confirmed payment and the Bitcoin had to have been transferred over to the person. So the judgment at this time was now that the Bitcoin is going to be sent to him, but not all 50 Bitcoin. It's the 50 Bitcoin, the value of it, which he bought it, which was around $530,000. They're not using today's values. They're using the value in which he bought it in 2019. So what I'm trying to get at here with the story is you got to buy from a reputable exchange. And if you do so, don't leave your coin on the exchange. Take that crap off, put it in a cold wallet. You know it's going to be safe. Do not trust, and I hate to say it, do not trust any of these exchanges. There may be a few good ones out there, but you know what? It's people or exchanges like Einstein and Quadriga. They leave a sour taste in my mouth. And the only way to ensure that you won't get screwed in the end, take that coin off the exchange, put it in a cold wallet, and you're going to be safe.
You might see me popping up on Reddit in the Canadian Bitcoin sub and the Canadian Investor sub, answering questions not specifically about like bum exchanges, but echoing the sentiment Len just, you know, articulated there. You cannot leave coins on exchange. Someone put this really succinctly to me today in a comment reply, because I was talking about the reasons you maybe don't buy the ETF and you instead buy Bitcoin, the underlying asset. And I think about this when I do things, but I didn't think about it when I explained it to this particular guy on Reddit. The counterparty risk exists with the third party brokers, exchanges, banks, you name it. You have to take steps to eliminate risk when you're dealing with Bitcoin. There's enough risk already misfiring on the wallet address. You don't need additional risk someone else holding your coins, you know, now to the tune of, was it 550,000 US, I guess, or something like that, that he's going to be out more or less? Like, come on.
530,000 Canadian, yeah.
Unbelievable.
What's really sad here is he bought 50 Bitcoin, and he's not going to get 50 Bitcoin in the end. He's going to get what he purchased it at the time. So this guy, if he was given 50 Bitcoin, what would it be worth today? Quite a bit. So essentially, the judgment is he's getting what he bought, but only at the time when he bought it, not what it's worth today. So this is, I stress, don't deal with shady exchanges. Take your coin off right away as soon as you get it. Put in a cold wallet. That's the only safe way to do it. Any other way, you're just risking it. As you mentioned, it's already risky. You know, it's pretty risky as it is. Let's try to minimize these risks. And yeah. So I'm done with the Canadian story. So we're going to go to the rest of the news. And today we have a couple of new additions to the Laser Eye Club. So we have Marcelo Claré. He's the CEO of SoftBank International. Pretty big name. And we also have some guy named Tom Brady who joined. I'm not sure who the heck he is.
Can we talk about SoftBank? Because I have been paying attention. I follow Massa Sun Capital on Twitter, who's like a SoftBank, evangelist.
Yes.
Shout out to Massa. He also follows me. Len, I told him he should follow us because the podcast is Bitcoin only, and he did follow us. So that, shout out to him. I don't know who runs that account, but God bless you, man. SoftBank has been rumored to, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here, but rumored to be adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. Their earnings call is this week. So let's hope for good news there. Now, you mentioned this other fella, Tom.
Tom who? Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, the GOAT. I don't know how I feel about this. I like Tom Brady. I think he's the best quarterback of all time. He's in the conversation for best athlete of all time. Do not at me. I don't want to hear your opinions on that. Unless it's Jordan, then I'll settle with Jordan or Gretzky or Brady. But that aside, I worry because Brady also has like that witch doctor who travels with him, Guerrero or whatever, that like put a wrench in between him and Bill Belichick over the years. And so, you know, business savvy. Yeah, maybe. But he's also, you know, sort of has this penchant for bad decision making. Although the proof is in the pudding, I guess, with his trainer, and hopefully will be with Bitcoin too. What do you think? Does Giselle have any Bitcoin? When is Giselle putting the laser eyes in her picture?
I think through extension, she has to have some. So yeah, so it's not going to be just Tom. It's going to be hers as well. So whatever. So next we have so the same company behind the S&P 500 and Dow Jones stock market gauge, stock market, they've launched some gauges: the S&P Bitcoin Index, the S&P Ethereum Index, the S&P Crypto Mega Cap Index, and these are ways of bridging the cryptocurrencies to Wall Street trading floors. These indexes will measure the performance of the digital assets tied to them. This is a way of getting the boomer market on board and try to get their eyes on cryptocurrencies.
Is this a happy medium between price, performance, and volatility, I believe, right? I think that's how I read it. Yeah, so it measures change in price in addition to the absolute price and the performance of the assets included. I mean, I don't love it. Everyone knows what I think about the alts, of which F is one. But I really can't say much about exposure and the direction this is going that's not positive, Ethereum included, I hate to say it. The more exposure that the traditional markets get to these assets, the more likely it is that they're picked up and that development continues around them and accelerates around them and all these things. So, Ethereum crowd, you can take this quote and put it on the wall or whatever. Ethereum included, it's good to have exposure to the markets. And I'm glad to see stories like this. I did just read, however, maybe you're going to mention this, I don't want to step on your toes, but that Gensler, who was a hero earlier in this podcast, now saying that the likelihood of a Bitcoin ETF being approved in 2021 is very low. So I'm not sure what to make of that now.
I think they're under the gun, though. I don't think that's an accurate statement. From what I understand, once the application's filed, they only have a certain amount of days in which they have to make a decision. So they've extended the last one to June. I don't think they could extend it very much past that, but I don't know. So we'll see what happens with the ETF. At the very least, the Americans have the ability to buy the Canadian ETFs, which happens to be our topic of the week this week, but we'll talk about that later. So next on the item list I have is Galaxy Digital, and they're buying Bitcoin custody firm BitGo, and it's going to be costing them $1.2 billion. And that's the first $1 billion plus dollar deal in this industry. So probably many more to come, but this is the first one, and it broke the ice.
Facebook bought Instagram about 10 years ago now, maybe a little longer, for $1 billion. So that's, you know, to give you an idea of what you can do with $1 billion if you spend it in the right place. Let's see what Galaxy can do with BitGo. What is Galaxy? Doesn't, like, I guess they're going to expand into offering what, additional financial services then with BitGo? Like, what's the plan? Doesn't Galaxy already offer some of that stuff?
No, they don't do any custody services. So it's going to be all done within house now. So they could do from basically cradle to grave, but there really is no grave with Bitcoin. So they could sell it and they could store it. So they could do it all in house now.
Cool. Very good.
So. So next we have Grayscale, and it's the first cryptocurrency to partner with an NFL and the NFL team, and they're partnering with the New York Giants. So they're going to be any of the Giants, they're going to be doing like tournaments or golfing events, whatever. And you're going to see Grayscale going to be plastered all over those going forward. Also, Grayscale now has over 1 billion Ethereum Classic under their wings. Why the heck is that?
I know. What can you even say, man? Like, I don't understand. I mean, I do understand why. Like, if people will buy it, they'll take your money, I guess. You know, fool me once, shame on, you know, everyone knows the saying. But I just don't, you know, what can you say? Fool me twice, man. Just shame on me. I'll just finish it. You can't really, like, you know. What can you say to these people? We can say, I told you so. You've already told them so 3 or 4 times. Like, how many more times they got to hear it?
Same time, like, with several times in the same month it's been hacked. That just last year. Ethereum Classic, what a joke. Anyways, so JP Morgan CEO was quoted as saying, I don't really care about Bitcoin, but clients are interested. They want to be able to put it on statements, buy and sell it. So doesn't look like he's a big Bitcoiner, but apparently his customers are, and it's they're going to have to basically bend their will and allow people to buy and sell Bitcoin and put on their statements.
What Jamie Dimon is going to find soon enough, if he doesn't offer a full suite of Bitcoin services, is that he only exists at the pleasure of the people he serves and takes money from in fees. So better get on board, Mr. Dimon, or you'll be in the soup kitchen serving up cold tomato for the masses next.
His name is Bitcoin Dimon, by the way.
Ah, right. Sorry.
Yeah, so South Korea's Bitcoin miners can now deduct electricity costs from crypto taxes filings. That's really interesting that they're so pro miner in South Korea, they're going to let them actually deduct electricity costs in their taxes. That's crazy.
It's outstanding. How come we're not doing that here? Like, we talked about it on the show. Well, we talked about this with the eco footprint last week, whenever we did that as a topic. Like I was saying then, and I'll say again now, if you have a method to remove greenhouse gases from the environment, right? That's a priority for every major world government. Whether I agree or not is a different story, but that's a priority. We have a responsibility, it seems to me, to make use of that energy if we can, as far as removing it and getting something back from it. And so why wouldn't the government offer the same break that they offer, you know, in the form of a carbon credit, for example, and add to it, excuse me, with a Bitcoin bonus or something like that? Certainly we can do this. I think at this point it's fair to say that any government that's not doing this is choosing not to. The question isn't if they're choosing not to, the question is why. You know, you're starting to see this pop up more and more. I think in the States there's some incentives to do Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin related work as well. So So what are we waiting for? What's the holdup? I'm curious now, because it's starting to become an obvious thing that seems to be intuitive for a lot of first world governments, regional and federal alike, but we are silent on the matter.
It's going to happen. I think inevitably it's going to happen here. I suspect the first place it will take place will be in the province of Quebec, because they have a lot of cheap energy over there. So for them to give incentive to miners, it's not going to really cost them all that much. So that's my guess. If it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to happen in Quebec. And speaking of governments and being, you know, pro Bitcoin and all that, so Norway's Minister of Climate and the Environment, I can't pronounce his name, but this dude said he's holding Bitcoin. So the minister is carrying out the environmental policies of one of the most renewable energy focused governments in the world. And he sees Bitcoin as well suited for a store of value. That's incredible stuff, Joey.
It's great. And he's the Minister of Environment. So, you know, what else do you need? What else do you need? Like, give this guy the laser eye. Someone hook him up with the laser eye photo. Let's get him on board. That's all I care about. Add him to the team.
You know what? I do have his Twitter tag out, and I'll check it out to see if he has the laser eye. So next we have Goldman Sachs. They've launched a new Bitcoin's derivative to Wall Street investors. Nothing much to say there. But next one's interesting, Joey. Square. They generated $3.51 billion in Bitcoin revenue and $75 million in gross profit from Bitcoin operations during the first quarter. Wow.
I love it. That's, man, like, how do you how do you justify? I think they also mentioned in their filing and in their call that they're still dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin. They bought another 50 million or 75 million last fiscal, right? Or last quarter. So they're already on the balance sheet with this. They're adding to their stack. Dorsey infamously is, you know, managing two companies, but really only the CEO of one, and it's not Twitter. So this, you know, Square seems to have his attention and he gets it. He's, you know, maybe he may be, as much as I hate to say, the most important figure in Bitcoin because of the reach he has, because of the user base Twitter has and Square has, and because of the conviction he's got. And it seems to me also the ear of the regulators that he seems to have. So, you know, it's important for him to be high conviction, high visibility, and a good Bitcoin citizen, like we've said on this show a few times. I like Jack, man. I don't agree with everything he does. I don't think anyone does, but he's got a very difficult job running Twitter. Hard to argue with the stuff he's done with Square, though. And I hope that these numbers continue to grow and that he continues to be, you know, the corporate face, we'll say, of Bitcoin. Because right now, you know, apart from Saylor, maybe, I don't think there's a better one available.
Yeah, and agreed. So the Bank of England, and there's been actually some really funny photos posted of them that people are just putting like buy Bitcoin or fiat as a scam. And it's basically being propped right up in front of the Bank of England's building. So it's interesting. But their governor issued a crypto investments warning. They're saying the people that are investing in it, they have the risk of losing it all. And I don't totally agree with what he's saying. Maybe if you're talking about non-Bitcoin related stuff, sure, you could lose it all. But man, if it's in Bitcoin, it's not going to go down to zero. It may go down to a few grand at the very least. We've had that before, but it ain't going away. It's going to be here for the long run. So invest in Doge. Yeah, it could disappear. Invest in Bitcoin. You're safe.
Did we not discuss on this show, was Norway among the forward-thinking, all-knowing governments that have implemented negative rates on retail banking accounts? So surely if there was anything that was going to zero, it would only be the savings you kept in your Norwegian checking account, not your Bitcoin holdings. Unfortunately for my friend from, my friend from Europe, will say. I was going to say something else, but I'm going to bite my tongue. All I would mention here is that only one currency is for sure depreciating in value every day, for sure going to zero. And by design, your purchasing power is disappearing. And it's not Bitcoin. So you at least have that going for you if you're in Big Orange.
Yeah. Next, we have Citibank. It's one of the big banks in the United States. And they're going to be considering offering their clients Bitcoin trading and custody due to the very rapid growth of interest. The head of foreign exchange at Citibank has been... he said that I don't have any FOMO. I can't believe he used that word because I believe that crypto is here to stay. So Citibank, it looks like they're capitulating and they're going to be selling Bitcoin and allowing their customers to hold custody of it.
This is something I want to touch on because I think we're missing maybe one thing here that was kind of breaking news before you started. And I'm stealing this from Massa Cap on Twitter. You know, I'm watching slowly but surely companies support the Bitcoin ethos, even if they don't have Bitcoin on the balance sheet. You're seeing, you know, stock buybacks, for example, at record rates. Amazon now issuing billions of dollars in debt to do buybacks as well. You're seeing Citibank and other banks start offering Bitcoin products, which even if you don't think that, you know, even if you're Jamie Dimon, you're going, oh, well, Bitcoin, I don't really care much about it. Well, guess what, Jamie? It doesn't matter if you care. You know, by even offering the product, you're helping the assault on your own castle. And you're seeing more and more of these companies, take what I would argue is the first step down the Bitcoin path, and it's offering a product, or it's buying back a stock, or it's like, you know that cash is depreciating. You know that the money you have is worth less and less. So you decide to do something with it, whether it's buybacks or something else. And Saylor, you know, is sort of the pioneer here, but you're seeing it more and more. Like, when was the last time Amazon did a debt issuance? You know what I mean? Like, when you know, like a bond offering? When? They haven't ever done that. So you can't tell me that Amazon is not looking at MicroStrategy and other companies doing similar things and going, well, maybe we should think about it too, even if we don't buy Bitcoin. One thing is for sure, that cash is trash, and more of these, you know, billion and trillion dollar companies are figuring it out. And I really hope, you know, that the average pleb figures it out soon too, because I suspect we're not far from the next leg up in the price of Bitcoin. So
yeah. So next we have John Dalby. He was the chief financial officer of Bridgewater Associates, and that's the hedge fund that was created by Dalio. In fact, it's the world's largest hedge fund. And he left that to join Bitcoin-focused NYDIG as a CFO. So leaving hedge fund started up by Dalio to basically go into Bitcoin. He's knee deep now. Actually, he's neck deep. So this is actually great news.
What can you say about that? Like Dalio, you know, I think he's closer than most hedge fund guys as far as like the Bitcoin mission and the understanding of why it's important. But like, man, you lose a C-suite executive to a Bitcoin company? That's got to send shockwaves through the company, whether Dalio admits it or not. You got to bet that there's text messages and Slack messages going around about that guy leaving what could only be described as a golden throne career to what? Join, you know, what his colleagues have called and probably continue to call a, you know, Ponzi scheme or a greater fool scheme or tulips or like, man, people are starting to jump ship in a lot of ways. I mentioned obviously the corporate treasuries and corporate bond issuings, but this is another thing you're seeing, brain drain, right? It's only a matter of time, man. It's only a matter of time. Things are all going one direction. The wind is in the sails, man. It's picking up. So I'm happy to hear about this and I wish him all the best at NYDIG.
So I guess the last story we have here is the chairman of the SEC. We talked about him. So he's been quoted as saying, Bitcoin is a digital scarce store of value, but highly volatile. So he's been providing information to Congress that the SEC will install more regulatory oversight to the crypto space. But he also said the commission will act within its purview.
His purview is like unlimited, right? So he can do whatever he wants pretty much. I'll mention one thing here, breaking news before the podcast started. Mark Zuckerberg put up a post on Facebook with two goats in the photo. And do you know what the goats' names are? According to him,
I wouldn't have a clue.
Bitcoin and Max.
Ooh, laser eyes.
Get the laser eyes out, man. Let's go. Dap them up.
So yeah, we might have a new Bitcoiner of the week later on. But so to basically finish the news, we're going to move on to our topic of the week, which are Bitcoin ETFs. We're not going to talk about the other ETFs, but only Bitcoin ETFs. So in Canada, in fact, we have four different Bitcoin ETFs. And we'll start off with Horizon Beta Pro Bitcoin. So the tickers are HBIT or BITI. So HBIT, HBIT is the bull symbol and BITI is the bear symbol. So these guys, the Horizon, if you're not familiar with them, but they do the inverse slash the 2x, like if you could do it on oil, you can do it on gold, whatever. So they're now moving into they have moved in to the Bitcoin space. The inception date was April 14th, so it's been out for about a month now. These two ETFs, the HBIT and BITI, they're eligible for all registered and non-registered investment accounts. Their managing fees is 1%. Just be wary about these ones because these are ETFs that hold derivatives and not actual Bitcoin, and they're rebalanced periodically. So these are good for speculation. Long-term holding, I would recommend not using any of the two that I just mentioned. The next one I have on the list is run by Purpose Bitcoin ETF, and it's BTCC. And they actually have three different tickers. So they have BTCC, which is a Canadian and currency hedged. BTCC-B, it's Canadian and non-currency hedge. And the third one is BTCC.U, and it's US dollars and non-currency hedged. This inception date was February 18th, 2021. Management fee is currently 1%, capped at 1.5%. Eligible accounts, TFSA, RRSP, personal and corporate non-registered investment accounts. They have 100% stored in cold wallets. And as of last week, they had almost 19,000 BTC under their portfolio. The next I have is Evolve Bitcoin ETF. The ticker is EBIT. So EBIT, and that's Canadian and unhedged. And the alternative we have EBIT.U, and that's the US dollar version. And the inception date for this one was February 19th, 2021. Management fee is really good. It's 0.75, eligible for TFSA, RRSP, personal, and business taxable accounts. And 100% of their holdings are in cold storage. And the last one I want to talk about is CI Galaxy Bitcoin ETF, BITCX. And so they have two different tickers, BTCX.B, that's Canadian and unhedged, and BTCX.U, that's US dollar. The inception date was March 5th, 2021. Management fees are incredible at 0.4%. Eligible in several accounts, RSP, RRIF, TFSA, RESP, RDSP, DPSP, personal and corporate non-registered accounts. 100% is stored in cold storage wallets. And through analysis on on Bitcoin CA on Reddit, this is the best one that tracks BTC. Of all the ones I've mentioned, this is the one that closely tracks BTC. So if you want to get into any Bitcoin ETF, not financial advice, but the BITCX ones are probably the ones you want to get into. You get the best rate of returns. I'm not sure if you want to discuss any more about that, Joey. That's all I have to say.
I only want to mention one thing. If you look at DRIP eligibility, so direct reinvestment of dividends, for example, in your accounts, there's one thing BTCC has that a few of the others don't. So BTCC is eligible for DRIP, where it seems to me the others are not, at least correct. in your traditional accounts. That's important to some people. It's not really to me. I'm not a big dividend guy, but that may be to my detriment. Maybe I'll have to change that approach. So the other thing I would note, and I was talking to somebody I read about this today, there's pros and cons to owning these things that, you know, some are more obvious than others. For example, the tax protection you have. I shouldn't say tax protection without a caveat. It is at the moment a certainty that you will be tax protected if you buy these in the accounts Len mentioned that are tax protected, RRSP, TFSA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. RSP is in a different category, but that's something to think about as you get closer to retirement. The gains you have are protected as opposed to the Bitcoin gains you have, which are not protected. And I think maybe taxed at, I've said capital gains on this show before, but it may actually be as a collectible too. I don't know exactly what they're taxing it as in Canada, because I don't sell. But something else to consider is the counterparty risk thing that I mentioned earlier. I wish I had the guy's handle here because he brought it up and reminded me. But when you own the coin and you have the keys on your own, you know, piece of paper, metal sheet, whatever, ice cube in your fridge, it's yours. There's no other issues with storage. There's no nonsense. There's no, potential issues with custodians or whatnot that exist here in the ETF space or when you're using exchanges. For the rookie investor who's looking to get started with Bitcoin and maybe doesn't have a good understanding of storage and custody, I think, Len, I don't know if I'm speaking for both of us. I suspect I am. This is not a bad way to toss, 2%, 3% and start to wet your feet in the space.
Yeah, I agree. It really is. It's like hands-off approach to get your exposure into Bitcoin. It's relatively easy if you have a TFSA, just, basically buy the ETF and away you go. I recommend it, especially in a TFSA environment where, essentially everything is tax-free. All your gains are tax-free. I think it's a real winner. It's a good place to, park a portion of your portfolio and let it run. And you're correct that BTCC is eligible for DRIP. It's also eligible for PAC. So it's got a couple of advantages over the other ETFs I mentioned, but it doesn't tend to have the same type of, doesn't cover the price of BTC as well as the other ones do, especially BTCX. That seems to be the best one if you want to track it as close to possible to BTC.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I've held them in the past. I think this is my strategy is at least at the moment to hold coin instead. And I don't know, ask me how it goes on Wednesday. So far, it hasn't gone that well. Maybe I have to wait a year before I mention the performance of that that investment.
Anything after an IPO is always choppy waters. So you really got to wait another month or two to really see where the floor and the ceiling is at. So
yeah.
So that's it for that topic. And next I want to move to the Bitcoiner of the week. Do you have a Bitcoiner of the week you want to talk about, Joey?
I only have a Bitcoiner of the week. It's Brady. Who else is it? It's Brady. The SoftBank guy is higher profile, probably has more push on the direction of the market, but it's Brady. This is continuing in the same vein as we talked about in this show many times in the last few weeks, you're starting to see now NFL players jump on this thing. You're starting to see NFL teams partner with exchanges and crypto companies. Jack Mallers and Lightning have acquired the, you know, I don't know what you call this, that, you know, the patronage of a few players, including some big name guys and some small name guys. And I'm still waiting to hear what happened with Saquon Barkley and his contract, because I know Mallers was tweeting at him and they were tweeting back and forth to each other a few weeks ago. So I look at Brady and I think if the NFL ever had any doubts about a guy who, you know, has money in the bank and is a winner, champion, MVP, you know, maybe the best out there, best ever. There's not a better Sherpa for Bitcoin adoption as a pro athlete or a pro team than Brady. But what I am waiting to see is how much he bought, because he's not like a billionaire, but he's got to have a couple hundred mil in the bank, eh? Like, so how much did he buy, you think? Like, what's the number that would impress you?
More than 10 million would impress me. I don't think we're ever going to see the numbers, though. He probably keeps it very close to his vest and he'll never reveal it. But yeah, he's my Bitcoiner of the week too. Let's just look at him. He's a 14-time Pro Bowler, seven-time Super Bowl champ, five-time Super Bowl MVP, and three-time league MVP. Man, this guy's a winner. He's been latching on to BTC. That's great. Like, you look at, you know, Ray Rice. He's probably buying Ethereum, right? Michael Vick. I wouldn't be surprised if he's doing XRP. Ryan Leaf.
Dogecoin.
He's probably Michael getting. Vick? What's that? Michael Vick's Dogecoin probably getting XRP. Vick, no. Dogecoin? I'm thinking OJ is getting Doge. So it would be Doge Simpson. So, yeah. So, you know, we don't see like these, you know, these. We see all just the best people latching on to BTC. And it's a way of, you know, it's a great place to store value. We don't see people latching on with these crappy coins. Like, screw them. Like, you know. Those shit coins, they could just rot in hell. And I'm not sure.
We don't need people. The shit coins don't need anybody. Like, they don't need anybody, because they have like entire marketing teams, marketing campaigns, budgets, foundations, organizations. Like, Bitcoin doesn't have any of this stuff. And guess what? It doesn't fucking need it. We got all these people jumping on their own. You know, they take their own initiative. They learn about it. They buy and they. You know, they embrace the ethos. That's the power of Bitcoin. I don't need Vitalik and his cronies dancing in a fucking unicorn shirt, the badger dance, flapping their wings or whatever that's making the rounds on Twitter. Like, how many more times do you have to see this guy on a stage doing something stupid before you realize that he's selling you coal? How many more times?
That was embarrassing. You know, well, we won't go any further. So do you have a no coiner of the week?
No, I don't have one. You go.
So it's going to be... Kevin Parker. You had heard of this guy before, Joey?
I've never heard of him. I'm almost afraid to ask, though.
So he's a genius senator from the state of New York, and he's in the New York Senate. So he wants to ban Bitcoin mining in New York for 3 years after he introduced a bill in the New York Senate. So his concerns are about climate change. So New York, we all know it's doing so well, and it's just swimming in cash these days. So in reality, they should not be picking and choosing which businesses should be operating in that state. They should be anybody that wants to open up business there, they should be accepting with open arms. But not this guy. This guy wants to shun away Bitcoin miners. Why? Because of climate change. Okay, fine. So we just talked about Norway's Minister of Climate and Environment. He's a Bitcoin hodler. All right. And just today, I just learned that the Bitcoin ETF Nine Point Partners will be looking to offset its carbon footprint. So the portion of the management fees will be diverted to assist with that effort. So we have Bitcoin ETF companies that are trying to be carbon neutral. All right. So clearly this climate change crap that this guy's trying to shill on us doesn't make sense. So I did a little bit of research in this guy. You know, this guy owed more than $50,000 in outstanding property taxes and water bills back in 2017, Joey.
No, I didn't.
So, okay, this guy is actually really interesting. So he didn't.
How did you find this out?
Oh, I did some digging. I did some digging hard here. So this guy didn't pay his property taxes for a total of 3 years. He's a New York senator. So in 2005, a little bit more digging on this guy, He avoided a judgment against him in a traffic agent case by agreeing to anger management. It was found that he hit the traffic agent in that time. In 2010, this guy was found guilty on two counts of criminal mischief stemming from an assault on a Post photographer. This guy who wants to ban Bitcoin mining because of climate change, he was photographed, Joey, parking in bike lanes.
So I have a special place in my heart for people who do that. That's the worst, absolute worst offense you can do. It's so easy to not do that, and it's such a pain to ride around cars parked in a bike lane.
Mr. Concerns about climate change, he parks in those bike lanes. And it turned out that not only did his car's plates not match the registration sticker on his windshield, he also had an expired emissions inspection sticker on his car. So the guy...
For shame.
Yeah. This is Mr. Climate Change issue. So this guy has concerns about the environment. Fine. But he drives an Lexus SUV. This guy is a true hypocrite. This guy actually once wrote to a Republican representative on Twitter to go kill yourself. And this is not out of context, Joey. The tweet was start to finish, kill yourself. This is the guy. He wants to ban Bitcoin mining because of climate concerns. This guy can't even manage his own life, let alone actually develop a bill to try to like help out the people of New York. This guy, if I have to characterize this guy, he's littered with knee-jerk reactions. The guy does not give a shit about people. He thinks he's better than everybody else. This guy, he wants people to fork out and pay taxes for his salary while he doesn't have to go out and pay for taxes. This guy is a piece of crap. This guy is my no coiner of the week.
I love that pick. I think it's fair to say that people like that have, you know, they deserve all the infamy they live with when all this stuff gets uncovered. Look, it's always the same person, right? We've seen this before from the International Bank of Settlements, the guy who's constantly talking about how Bitcoin and governments need to clamp down on spending and whatnot. Meanwhile, the guy can't fit into a suit. The button, you know, needs to be made of high-grade titanium Teflon. Augustin Carson's, you should look that guy up. This guy's never, he's never been hungry in the recent years, I'll tell you that much. This is a great pick, man. And also, I don't know what database you went through to find out what the guy's parking ticket history was, but outstanding work by you again. Our crack research team just doing an outstanding job for the people, finding out the most important details of hypocrites and charlatans all over the planet. So good for you.
Thank you. Now, make this... This is a lesson for all you no-coiners out there. I will find you, I will hunt you, and I'll make you my no-coiner of the week. Clean up your act. Those skeletons are going to come out of the closet. I will make it happen.
Clean it up. I think that's it. Is that the end of the show?
That's it. The only thing we have left...
Let's say a prayer that the audio we recorded for an hour and a half before we got cut off actually fucking saves. And if it doesn't, you're going to know, because I'm going to tell you right after this, and we have to do this again tomorrow from scratch.
So to go any further, Joey, let's talk about our jobs. Are you a financial advisor?
I'm not. I hold no licenses and no registrations. How about yourself?
No. So anything I said, and I would imagine anything you said in this show, just take it with a grain of salt, because we're not financial advisors, and do your own due diligence.
That's absolutely right. What's the price of Bitcoin in U.S. dollars is $56,367. And it's changing. We'll say it's $56,355.
It's been flat. I got $68,254.35 in Canadian dollars.
Outstanding. Accumulate and stack up, everybody. Thank you, Len. Take care of yourself. Have a good evening, and we'll see you next week.
Take care, everyone, and hello, Sabrina.